The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
So we are doing Parshas Vayishlach. Now before we go into the Parsha itself, we just want to outline its main events. Okay, the main events that happen in the Parsha so we can see things within the context of what's developing. So first of all, Yaakov sends angels, or sends messengers, we'll deal with that in a second. He sends messengers to Esav, he's preparing to meet Esav. Next scene, Yaakov finds himself alone with a man, and he wrestles with this man, and in the end this man blesses him, touches his thigh, and Yaakov comes out slightly crippled, or slightly limping anyways. After that, Yaakov does meet Esav. Esav begins to cry. They make some form of peace. And it says that Yaakov then comes to Shechem complete. He buys a piece of property from Bnei Chamor. And he calls out to God, the God of Israel. Next scene, Dina goes out and is, we'll see when we get into it, but certainly seems like she's raped, right, by Shechem ben Hamor. The sons of Yaakov are overwhelmed, they're angered. They go into Shechem and they make a deal with Shechem. And they say, well, listen, if you want to marry our women, then you have to be like us and circumcise yourself. And they say, okay, we'll do that. And what happens is, well, after their circumcision, Shimon and Levi go in and kill the whole city. Right? God then tells Yaakov to go back to Beth El. Yaakov tells all the sons to get rid of all the strange gods that they had taken as spoil from that particular event. And Devorah dies. God gives Yaakov a new name. Binyamin is born, and Rachel dies. Right. Then it says that Reuven, it's not very clear, but he does something very strange, and we'll just leave it at that, with one of Yaakov's, not even his wife, but the maidservant. And then the Parsha says Yaakov has 12 children, gives them names, Isaac dies, and the Parsha ends off with this long enumeration of the generations of Esav. Okay, that's Parsha's Vayishlach. Okay, so now let's deal with the first part of this, which is Yaakov preparing himself to meet Esav. What do we see over there? Vishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefanav El Esav Achiv Arza Seir Sde Edom. Yaakov sends messengers to Esav his brother, the land of Seir, to the field of Edom. And what does he tell them to say? What does he tell them to say? So he says something very strange that, so you shall say to my master, Adoni Esav. That's a pretty heavy thing to say. Adoni Esav. So says your servant, Yaakov. It really is quite amazing what he's saying. And he says, listen, I have this and I have that. I'm telling you all this to find favor in your eyes. And Rashi says, Limtzochein beinecha shani shalem imcha umevakesh avatcha. That I am complete with you, and I am requesting your love. I am requesting your love. It's unbelievable. Now, what's disturbing about the words of Yaakov? What's disturbing about what he's doing? He's being subservient. He's flattering Esav. He's certainly not coming off very strong. Right? We would expect something a little bit more powerful. Yeah, it comes out of love and land, that he's ready to go and go confront Esav. And he said, "I'm going back." And it was clear, as Rashi brings down, that why did he say, "I want to go back"? Because now that Yosef has been born, he knows that he has the antidote to Esav, so it implies that he's ready to go back and somehow work things out with Esav. That's what this is all about. He went to Lavan. He feels he proved himself in Lavan. He was true. He was honest. He's now ready to come back and meet Esav and work this whole thing out. Now, Rashi says something very interesting. Vishlach Yaakov Melachim. And Yaakov sent Melachim. Now, generally, Melachim means angels. And in fact, the Midrash says, yes, he actually sent angels. Right? Now, we're seeing over and over again, Yaakov is really quite close to angels already. When he left Lavan's house, a band of angels met him. Right? I mean, we've really never had this kind of a thing in the entire Chumash. That, okay, we have the story of men coming to Avraham, and we're told these are really angels. But over here, the Chumash is literally calling them a band of angels, Malachei Elohim, come towards him. Right? He sees a lot of angels in his life. Angels going up and down. He meets these angels. And now, not only did angels come towards him and meet him, but now he's sending angels. Angels are doing what he wants. So there's no other understanding that could be then to see that in fact Yaakov has reached a level of some kind of divinity. Because just as God sends angels and God masters angels, so we see over here that the fact that angels are meeting him and he's sending angels and they're doing his will, the Chumash, on a pshat level, that's the amazing thing. I mean, if I started giving you all these drushes and zohars, okay, we could get away with it. But on a drush level, right, that's not what's being said here. It's just a pshat level that all of a sudden, angels are meeting Yaakov, Yaakov are sending angels. And one of the pshats that I read about why he called the place Machanayim, which Machanayim, he saw a band of angels. So Machanayim, you could think is, you know, a camp of plurality, of manyness. But the truth is, it really should then have been called Machanot, camps. Right? Machanayim means pair. Right? There are a pair of camps. So one of the commentaries say, I'm not sure where the source, that he saw that this band of angels were a pair to his family. And that his family, he had produced a family that's on par level to angels, and then when he saw the angels coming towards him, he saw a pair, his family and the angels, and he called this place Machanayim. Which then takes it even further, this notion of taking on a certain divinity, a divine quality in his understanding of himself, and he sends out these angels towards Esav. Okay, so we see here that Yaakov has become somehow a master of divine forces. Right? Again, reflecting this idea that Yaakov is becoming more godlike, itself connected to the notion of the fixing of the tree of knowledge of good and bad, that you shall become like Elohim. Right? You shall become like Elohim. You know, sometimes angels are referred to as Elohim also. So this is all reflecting that development in his personality, in his greatness, that he's reaching this level that's angelic or of godliness. Okay, he's come out of Lavan's house, and this is the level he's at. Okay. Now, so he's sending angels. Now the Zohar says something very interesting. The Zohar says in Tehillim 91, Ki melachav yitzav elach lishmorcha. And the Zohar says that his angels will, he will command upon you to guard you. This is the Yetzer Hara. that the Yetzer Hara is also referred to as one of God's angels, of course. You know, the angel of death is the Yetzer Hara. That the Yetzer Hara is actually one of the angels. So there is an implication over here from the Zohar that who did Yaakov send? He sent Malachim. Who are these Malachim? It's the angels of evilness. It's the angels of Yetzer Hara. Which again reflects this basic idea that we have about Yaakov. That Yaakov not only is in control of the angels, he's even in control of the Yetzer Hara. That even the Yetzer Hara is a servant to Yaakov. It's a fundamental idea that reoccurs with Yaakov. That evil, as evil, works for him. Right? See, most people either have to transform the evil into goodness, like Avram Avinu, it says that he transformed the evil into goodness, and he succeeded in creating some kind of peaceful relationship with the Yetzer Hara. And it seems that when you learn about Yitzchak, he transcended his Yetzer Hara. It was just way up there. Right? But Yaakov, he's able to have the forces of darkness work for him. Right? As forces of darkness. They don't have to become anything else. But even as forces of darkness, they are somehow serving him. Right? Somehow serving him and his purpose. It's the self, itself, the expression how Yaakov is really fulfilling the purpose of creation. By demonstrating Hashem's oneness, that even the force of evil, which is opposing God's will, in the most ironic way, will be serving God's will also. Okay. And so, he says to these angels, go and speak to Esav and say, my master, your servant, I want to find favor in your eyes. And Rashi is very interesting, because what does it mean? He says, I've lived with Lavan, and I've been there until now, and I have ox and donkeys and sheep and servants and maids. And I'm sending this to you to find favor in your eyes. And of course, what's difficult about that verse? This is what I have, Esav. And I'm telling you this to find favor in your eyes. And of course, the question we have to ask in terms of the psukim are, right, what does one have to do with the other? To say that I have this, that, and the other, right? Doesn't seem, you know, that. Why is that going to find favor in your eyes? So Rashi, sensitive to that point, says, Abba Amarli, Father said of me, Mitala Shemayim Ushmaneh Haaretz, that your blessing will be from the dew of the sky and of the fat of the land. Zu eino, this is not lo mina shemayim, this is not from shemayim, but lo mina aretz, and this is not of the earth. So what is Rashi answering? What's his answer? Right, that it didn't work anyways. Right, why is he saying I've got cattle and I've got sheep? Not cattle, he actually says I've got oxen, I have donkey, sheep, servants. I'm telling you this to find favor in your eye. Now why is this going to find favor in his eye? Because Rashi's saying, but he's basically saying that it didn't work. Brother Esav, what are you worried about? Are you afraid of the blessings Abba gave me? Look, I've been by Lavan, and, it really didn't happen. But according to Rashi, what does it imply that Yaakov is doing? I mean, does Yaakov think he did not get the blessing? So then what does this imply, according to Rashi, that Yaakov is in fact doing? Well, he's saying that I really didn't. I mean, what, that blessing that you hate me for? It didn't really materialize. Don't worry about it. What's he doing? Yeah. Rashi's answer is that it didn't happen. Now, according to Rashi, what are the implications of Yaakov saying this? So what is Yaakov being? He's again being very tricky, no? I mean, this is being a little bit what he did in a couple scenes ago. He's being quite manipulative. Oh, it didn't happen anyway. That's what it implies over here, no? The Abba's blessings, what do you think? That Yaakov for a moment doesn't believe that his father's blessings will materialize? Maybe not now, maybe not yet, maybe in the future, right? And to say, he's being a little bit tricky once again. And the Zohar says, in fact, that's what he's doing. That really Yaakov is being quite wise, right, and quite manipulative once again. But again, this is the amazing thing, because we see if Yaakov is this manipulative type of guy, so why does it say that v'titen emet le'Yaakov, that God gives truth to Yaakov, when we see again an example of Yaakov's trickery, Yaakov manipulation, right? Because as we learned, everything he does is l'shem shamayim, right? And even this, and the Gemara says even more than that, that it's actually permissible, and learns from over here, well, in a couple lines later, because he'll say something that's even more unbelievable to Esav, says, you're allowed to flatter the evil in this world. Right? You're allowed to flatter the evil in this world. And of course, flattering the evil is being manipulative. Flattering is, oh, you're so nice, you're so sweet. I mean, we're going to see later on that Yaakov actually says to Esav, he says, Esav, seeing your face is like seeing the face of God. It's an unbelievable thing to say, right? And so it's there that the Gemara Sota says, we learn from here that you can flatter the evil people in this world. Meaning he's using deceitfulness, l'shem shemayim. And you're allowed to do that if this person is truly evil. But of course, I don't know if I'm allowed to do that, because I don't know if I could do it with such l'shem shemayim qualities. But we have to understand that this is Yaakov. Yaakov, again, is learning how to use the Yetzahara. He has stolen the blessings of Esav, which was his deceitfulness. Esav's blessing was his ability to be deceitful. Had he used it to deceive his Yetzahara? Had he used it to deceive the deceivers? Right? And this is how Yaakov, again, we see Yaakov as the model of raising the holy sparks, taking that which is even evil, and it becoming a servant. Now there's another approach to what he's actually doing. And this is from the Be'er Moshe, with sufficient proof from the Zohar that this is in fact acceptable. Really what Yaakov is doing is being extremely humble. He's humbling himself before Esau. And that's precisely how you fight Esau. See, when we first look at this parsha, we're bothered. Why didn't Yaakov be a big man and go fight Esau? Right? So the first approach is, well, he's trying to manipulate Esau. And that's the way he's fighting Esau, by manipulating him and just getting away and running away from some kind of head-on collision. The other approach is, no, he actually is fighting Esav. He's taking out the biggest weapons available to beat Esav, and it's called humbleness. Esav can't stand humbleness. Because Esav's midah, Esav's attribute is gaiva. It's conceitedness. Because it's based on this feeling that I'm self-contained, I'm complete, I'm whole, I'm it. And by Yaakov, after everything he's done, he says, listen, Esav, say to my master, Esav, I'm ready to be humble. Say, your servant, Yaakov, I speak with such humbleness in your presence. I have lived, your servant, Yaakov, has lived with Lavan. And everybody knows that Lavan's one of the most wicked people on earth. And he is hinting to him, in Lavan Garti, and we mentioned before, Garti is Taryag, which is what Rashi brings down the Midrash. That I lived with Lavan and the 613 mitzvahs I fulfilled. And therefore, this is really his big guns. I could be by such a Rasha. I could be in the presence of the greatest deceiver in the world. I could be in a place that really is based on cultivating your ego. And I came out still a servant of God, and I'm still speaking with humbleness. Right? This was actually a sign to Esav, you better watch out. Because nothing has gotten me, I am still a humble person. And that really, his humbleness is his very formula as the antidote to Esav. Esav cannot deal with humbleness. Now, of course, his messengers go and they come back and they say, oh, forget about it. He's coming and he's got 400 men with him to kill you. And in verse 8, V'yira Yaakov ma'od v'yetzerlo. And like Yaakov was frightened and bothered, full of anxiety. And of course, what would we have to ask on this verse? We know why he's afraid, but there's something that really should bother us a little bit. Exactly. That's the problem. He's nervous? We're talking about Yaakov, or Rashi just said, was sending angels. Yaakov just met angels. Yaakov, who just had God's promise, I will guard you, I will guard you. Yaakov Avinu is frightened? So perhaps we could say that this itself is part of his anivus, part of his humbleness. That even though he's got all the angels working for him, the Gemara says that why is Yaakov afraid? Because he says, Shema Yigrama Chet, maybe I did a Chet. Right? Yaakov, oh wait, the Gemara says, Bracho says, that what's bothering Yaakov is he's still got in the mind, maybe I did a Chet. He says, this is brilliant, because this is exactly the narrow bridge that Yaakov has to walk on. Because on one hand, we see Yaakov transcending. We see him going towards a state of godliness. A state of godliness. And yet the unique thing about him is he's still human. This is the goal of Judaism. The goal of Judaism is to reach a state of human divinity. That sense of godliness in no way undermines my sense of humanness. Because the goal of Judaism is a relationship with God. And in order for God to offer man a relationship, God must allow man to be godly, because how can nobody have a relationship with God? What will be the substance upon which I can have a feeling of confidence to stand before Hashem and feel that relationship? It's that sense that I've included divinity within myself, and yet, if I've included divinity within myself, then I am the divine and there's no relationship. I still maintain that sense of relationship, that sense of humanness. This is Yaakov, he's in the middle. Right? This is Yaakov. He's able to have all those divine forces working for him, and yet still have that sense of humanness, that sense of don't believe in yourself until the day you die. Okay? The Sfat Emma says that really this is a shevach for Yaakov. This is a praise of Yaakov. That even though Yaakov has heard the promises of God, even though he knows the world from God's perspective, he still lives according to his perspective. Itself, again, a reflection of that balance that Yaakov has achieved in his life, that is able to be both in Olam Haba and in Olam Hazeh at the same time. He's able to see the world from a point of view of God's promise, and yet that in no way undermines what I have to do in this world. In terms of what I perceive in this world. And that's so crucial in Jewish consciousness. To be able to, on one hand, recognize fully that everything's in God's hands, and yet still know that life is in my hands. He is the Father who lives with paradox in unity. Because if you understand that everything's in God's hands, so then what are you doing? What do you care? Give it to God. Don't be nervous. And if you think it's all in your hands, then of course you become neurotic. And Yaakov is again that balance. He himself in his life manifests the oneness of God, Hashem Elohim, Hashem meaning that it's all in Hashem's hands and you're nothing, there's nothing to worry about because there's nothing. And yet Elohim means you're powerful, you're strong, you have to make it happen. Hashem Elohim is itself the unification of Hashem's name, which reflects the unity of what for the human beings is a paradox. And Yaakov is again able to do that. And what does he do? He gets very nervous. So the first thing he does is he splits his camp. He says, well, if one of the What if he comes to the other camp and hits it, then the other one? What is he doing? I mean, basically, he's acting like a very bright war general. I mean, how do you handle in a situation of war? And yet, on the other hand, the pasuk after it says, "V'yomer Yaakov Elohei Avi Avraham." This is verse 10. And Yaakov said, "God of my father Abraham, God of my father Jacob, Yudkei Vavkei, that said to me, 'Come back.'" What is he doing? He's praying to Hashem. What's the first thing he does? I mean, shouldn't he pray? What do you expect Yaakov to first pray? The first thing he does is he figures out, what do I have to do in this world? Right? I've got to figure out what I must do in this world. And then, call out to the God of my father, which is the God that relates to my actions. Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, the God who has promised and everything will be alright. And he prays, Hatzileni na miyad achi miyad Esav. And he prays to Hashem that he's been able to do that balance act once again. As we learned before, that when Yitzchak said the voice is the voice of Yaakov, and the hands are the hands of Esav, the Gemara said the voice is the voice of Yaakov, he knows how to pray, and yet he's got the hands of Esav, he knows how to fight. This is the uniqueness of what a Jew is all about. That the Jewish people, on one hand, are both completely believing that everything's in Hashem's hands, complete emunah, complete bitachon, and yet that in no way minimizes their personal effort to do it in this world according to the way they have to understand this world. Right? And to a certain extent, you find, unfortunately, that balance polarized within Jewish community. There are those religious Jews who say, it'll be alright, just pray, Mashiach will come, we'll just sit and we'll wait. And then there's those who say, no, you gotta do, to the point that there's those people who say you gotta do and they don't even believe in God. They believe it's just in their hands, and then there's those Jews who believe it's just in God's hands. But the Jewish way is, it's more than both. You've just got to accept the paradox of Hashem Elokim. That it means that yes, God promises, but that doesn't mean that in any way that has minimized your personal responsibility to get up and do it. You still have to do it. And this is incredible. So in fact, Rashi brings down something quite amazing, because when you think of it, Yaakov does three things. He sets himself up for war. He prays. And then he gets together a real nice present that he's going to send to Esav. Three things. He gets ready to fight. He completely prays to Hashem and says, "Help me! It's all in your hands." And then he gets together some real nice gift. You know, a welcoming gift to Esav. "Hi, Esav, here. Boom. Take all this. Boom, boom, boom." And this is so perfect because it's so much reflecting what Yaakov is all about and what Jews are all about. That, and this is the Sfat Emetz approach. He says, this is how you fight evil. First of all, you have to know when you're fighting evil, you gotta fight. And you gotta get yourself ready to fight with all your kochos, mamish, all your power. And yet you have to realize that without Hashem, you're nothing. And you would never win without Hashem, so you realize, and Hashem is completely helping me also. And what are the gifts? The gifts is the realization that you not only want to beat Esav, you want to do something even better. You don't even want to change him. You want to raise up the sparks. You want to somehow get his love. You want to get the Yetzirah to love you. As a Yetzirah, it loves you. Not like it becomes a Yetzer Tov. But somehow you succeed in giving gifts to the Yetzirah and recognizing the holy sparks that the Yetzirah offers you. And this fulfills what it says, "And you shall love God with all your heart. B'chol levavcha. What is a b'chol levavcha? The Gemara says you have to love God with both your yetzers, with your yetzer ra and your yetzer tov. Now what does that mean, your yetzer ra and your yetzer tov? Does it mean you take your yetzer hara and you make it into tov? No, then it wouldn't be no longer a yetzer ra. It means mamish, the ongoing conflict with your yetzer hara becomes a source of energy, and you actually give the yetzer hara a big kiss for offering you the opportunity to struggle, because you see how that struggle is actually helping you build yourself. And therefore, he's giving him gifts. He's fighting him and giving him gifts at the same time. It's a little strange. When I'm fighting, I don't like you. You're not giving him gifts, I like you. And that, all that, which for most people would be an, you know, unresolvable paradox and conflict, Yaakov has got it all worked out. He's got it all worked out. He's able to relate to Esav in this manner. Okay. So Yaakov is really extremely unique. And he wants to be complete with Esav. He wants Esav to love him. And it doesn't mean for a moment he's not recognizing the evilness of Esav. But he's recognizing that Esav's evilness and his conflict with Esav is in a certain way also a gift, an opportunity for sparks of consciousness of Hashem in his life. Okay. So the next scene is very interesting. Chapter 32, verse 22. V'ta'avor ha-mincha al-panav, and he sends this mincha, this offering to Esav, v'hu lan b'laylahu, and he rests there that night, v'yakam b'laylahu, and he got up, and he took his two wives, and he passes over the wadi of Yabok. Now look at this very interesting verse. Because if you read it carefully, you'll see that this word Balaila Hahu has been very carefully coordinated. Because it says Vatavwara Mincha Panavahu Lan Balaila Hahu, and he rests in that night, and then it says Vayakam Balaila Hu. What should it have said? Hahu. So the Hahu in the last verse was referring to Lila. So what is the who referring to? V'yakam b'layla who? It's referring to Yaakov. Now this is suggesting something. Yaakov got up. V'yakam, and he got up in the night. He got up. That Yaakov is going to get up in night, again, parallel everything that we've been seeing with Yaakov. It's seeing the light in the darkness, getting up in the fallenness, ascending through the descent. This is all the meat of Yaakov, because what's going to happen? He passes over the Wadi of Yabok, and verse 25, Vivater Yaakov Levado, and Yaakov tarried by himself, Viavek Ish Imo Ad Alot Hashachar, and a man wrestled with him until the sun rises. Right? Through the wrestling, the sun rises. Right? He's wrestling until sun rises. And he sees that he's not able, this man, and he hits him in his thigh while Yaakov is struggling with him. And he says, let me go because Shachar has come, the morning has come. He says, I will not send you until you bless me. And he says, okay, what's your name? He says, Yaakov. He says, no, your name, not Yaakov, but your name is Israel. Why? Ki sarita im Elohim v'im anashim v'tuchal. Because you have struggled with God and you've struggled with people and you're able. Now this is a crucial point. He says, tell me your name. He says, what do you not know my name for? And he blessed him and went. Unbelievable. This is like the climax of Yaakov's career. Because he has to meet not only Esav, but the oral tradition says, who is this man? He is the angel of Esav. Now what does it mean, the angel of Esav? As we mentioned before, every nation has a collective soul, and that collective soul is its angel. So the angel is like the root, the essence. And so remember, Yaakov's confronting Esav, and who does he find himself fighting? Esav's angel. This is not just a battle between human beings. This is a battle of ideologies. This is not only a physical battle, this is a spiritual battle going on. And what's quite amazing is that this angel, which is the angel of Esav, which they say is really the Samach Mem, which is the force of evil, the ultimate force of evil, what does this angel do? He says, I will not let you go until you bless me. I want the forces of evil to bless me. Isn't it amazing? Again, for Yaakov, even evil will be the source of his blessing. Itself a reflection of how powerful he is. And he gets the name Israel. Because you have battled with gods, you could read, and you have battled with people, and you're able. Now, the Be'er Moshe points out, and it's just a hint, but I know Kabbalistically I've seen it before, the name Avar Yabok has some very deep significance. And one significance is, it's the exact numerical value of the unification of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei Elohim. Yabok. He passes over Yabok. Where did he go into? What did he pass over into? He's going into a new state. He's going into a whole new state of being. He passed over, and Yabok, which is numerically 112, is the numerical value of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei 26, and Elohim, which is 86. Isn't that amazing?
Avar Yaakov is 112?
Yabok. Yabok is 112.
The word itself, Yabok.
Yes, and it's the exact numerical value of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei Elohim. He's making it. Uh-huh. And the oral tradition says, V'yivatir Yaakov levado. Yaakov was by himself. So the oral tradition says something really strange. First of all, it says, why was he by himself all of a sudden? What was he doing? What was he doing by himself? So the Zohar, the Midrash says, I mean, the Gemara says, oh, he forgot some little pots. You know, they'd be moving. He's, oh, the little pots. Right? So he went back by himself to get the little pots. And this tells us that the tzaddikim love their money more than their bodies. And why? Because they don't want to steal. It's an unbelievable piece. What is that supposed to mean? They don't want to steal. They love their money. It's really quite amazing. Tzaddikim love their money. V'nisgav Hashem levado. And on that day, God will be by himself. And the oral tradition connects that levado of God to the levado of Yaakov. And that Yaakov will merit to see the true oneness of God all this is coming to play. Because this is Yaakov's Midah. He's able to see God's oneness, the oneness that can include even the forces of evil, and even those forces of evil serve God. And Yaakov goes back for these little pots. And that means that even the small things in the world are considered important to him. It's self-reflecting notion of the all-inclusive oneness of God, that even little details in the world are included within the context of divinity. And Yaakov is recognizing that. One approach. The other approach is, why does the tzaddik love his money more than his body? Because the tzaddik, the body is a gift. There's nothing you could deserve to get that gift. But tzaddikim love their money because of something they did to earn it. That actually tzaddikim like to cultivate their sense of self. Because they know that they want to have a relationship with God unless you have that sense of self. That sense of human self that I worked for it, I got it. You can't have that. And I saw another commentary say a very interesting thing. Of course, there's so many ways of understanding this. But one very far out approach is, because the tzaddik really no longer has a yetzahara, he purposefully cultivates one so that he could actually serve God with his yetzahara. Amazing idea. And that idea fits even more to this idea that Yaakov, that which most people say, oh, forget about money. No, Yaakov says, no, I'm not going to forget about money because I don't want to lose my yetzahara for money because I see it as such an opportunity to serve Hashem with my yetzahara. Again, this all fits into the idea that Yaakov isn't trying to break his yetzahara. Yaakov isn't even trying to transform his yetzahara into some like goodness. Yaakov's able to serve God with his yetzahara. He sees yetzahara as a great opportunity. He sees the snake, instead of saying, oh, slap that snake around, he's really give the snake a big kiss and say, ah, I see so much light in all your darkness. I'm not trying to make your darkness into light. I actually see your darkness. And this is the amazing thing about Yaakov. Yaakov's life is full of struggle more than any other avot that we see. I mean, his life starts off with struggle. He's in his mother's womb. He's already fighting with his brother in the womb. And then he's struggling in the house of Laban. And he's struggling with this wife and that wife. And he's struggling with Esav. He's struggling with this angel. And then sure enough, what's going to happen? Next scene, his daughter is raped. Next parsha, his son Yosef is taken away from him. I'm just struggle. How do you deal with evil and pain in the world? Yaakov really knows the secret. Because he sees struggle as an opportunity for growth. You know, there are various approaches philosophically to evil. One approach to evil was, and this is Leibniz's approach, evil is bad, but it's really just an illusion and everything's really fine. It's just an illusion. Or the approach of Voltaire was, that's ridiculous, you're crazy, evil's not an illusion, it's real, and life basically is just rotten. Evil's there. He's basically a pessimist. I mean, Leibniz is an incredible optimist. It's all just an illusion. Everything's just fine. And Voltaire was a real pessimist. Like, evil's there. There's nothing you can do about it. It's just there. You accept it's there. But the Jewish approach is, it's really there. It's not an illusion. It's really there. But the struggle and the fight against it is a great opportunity. And in its darkness, it actually serves light. In its being against you, it really is for you in the long run. Because through your fighting it, you become built by it. And this really is Yaakov's approach. He's able to just serve God with all his Yetzirah. He sees the Yetzirah as an incredible opportunity. He doesn't have to make peace with it. He loves the war with it. Right? And the war with it is his way of making peace with it in a very strange way. So, Yaakov has now fought this angel. This angel, the Samech Mem, the angel of Esav, is giving him blessing. And he gets this new name, Yisrael, which means to struggle with God, to struggle with people, but you can do it. Right? You can do it. You'll succeed. You'll overcome it. Let's wait, because it's connected that he hasn't finished yet. There's still something missing over here. Still something missing over here. And the Zohar says that because he got him in the thigh, this is so appropriate, that Torah institutes will always have problems with money. Because the thighs are that which support you, right? And he got him in his supporters. And being Yaakov is Torah, so he couldn't get his Torah, so he got the supporters of Torah. Right? And that's how he gets you. Right? Because he can't get the Torah. We want to learn Torah. So the Samech Mem's only last place of getting him was the supporters of Torah. He got him in the place that supports Torah. Okay. So, just one last thing, because what happens is, V'yikra Yaakov Shem Makom Pniel. He called that place Pniel, ki ra'iti Elohim panim el panim v'tinatzel nafshi. And I lived. I mean, this is it. Right? This is the highest level. To be able to say, I've seen God face to face. Isn't it Moshe that said, I'd like to see your face, Hashem? God said, no man can see my face and live. The Zohar says, no man can see my face and live, but you will see my face when you die. Right? No human being can be in their body and see God face to face without having to lose their body. But Yaakov did. Because Yaakov has reached such a level of transcendence that he's actually incredibly directly seeing God face to face, and he's still in his body. Right? He's still in his body. This is just all part of being able to include it all. Even the physical has been included in his recognition of God's oneness. Even the forces of evil aren't outside the divine oneness. But somehow, even within God's context of his oneness, evil is there, and yet it's completely subservient. And yet it's part of God's light. The darkness is part of the light.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.